All right, so let's talk to Will. What's your opening statement, Will, about Twin Peaks?
I was watching the finale the other day with Morgan, and she said, "I feel like Bob Dobbs."
Well, that's nice. I don't know how well she knows me. She used to take the drops. Don't know if she still does.
Yeah, she knows enough about you. But she, because we were watching it, and the, you know, the scene when he's driving through the desert.
Right.
The end. That's on Pear Blossom Highway, which is where she's spending a lot of time. And she's like, this is all, it's just like retracing her steps over the last 2 years.
Well, that's good. Now, what, did you say she knows me well enough? Did you just say
I mean, yeah, she knows you well enough, yeah.
Yeah, so what did she mean she feels like Bob Dobbs?
In that everything that you see is about, you know, it's about you. Specifically, like she thought the show was about her.
She thought it was about her.
Yeah, suddenly she felt like it was about her, and I was like, that's the difference between the return and the original series.
Okay, how does that jive with her saying she feels like Bob Dobbs? Is she saying that because she thinks it's about her, she says that's what Bob goes through?
Yes.
Yeah, so like Xenocrony, or at least Xenocrony.
Yeah.
So she didn't think it was about me. She just felt like, I know what Bob's talking about because this is about me because they're driving on my highway.
Right.
Yeah, but that's just one part. You can't make a lot out of that. That's just one little thing.
Yeah, but I think,
thing.
You know, there's more to it than just that. But regardless, I thought it was kind of funny.
No, let's deal with this. I mean, you know, we got a competitor here. Well, what are some other reasons she says it's about her?
Well, I'd have to ask her. I'm not going to speak for
her. Okay,
well, my opening statement.
Okay, you prove it's about me. Let's hear your statements about that.
I mean, you've already proved it's about you.
No, a lot more came out in the finale.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, for a while, when I first came across the word Tulpa in reference to Ion, I don't think it was something you guys said, but I was researching, like, thought forms and all that on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And so that concept, you know, when Ion first came around, I was researching all that years ago.
You were trying to find a reason. You tried to find a category for Ion.
Yeah.
And Tulpa came up.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, some people say that, you know, I created this projection of myself, me and Carolyn did. That's a Tulpa, and that's what Ion is, something we projected. Is that what you mean?
Kind of, or just like the idea of, like the non-physical taking shape, or like the android meme becoming coherent, or whatever.
Okay.
And this is like, you know, years ago, 2000.
Right, so the point is you knew what Tulpa meant before it got talked about on Twin Peaks.
Yeah, specifically in research I was doing about Ion.
Right. Okay, so what do you make of it now that it's in Twin Peaks?
I mean, my understanding of a Tulpa is different than how it came about in Twin Peaks.
Okay. So that's just an interesting thing that we inspired. You found it about Tulpas, and then they made it a theme. Okay, that's all right. Then the next point.
You know, of course, electricity became a major aspect of the show.
Of the final. Of the final scenes.
Of the final scenes.
I mean,
it has to do with parallel worlding. Right.
No, electricity. I think it's in the second last episode. Mike, the one-armed guy, goes, electricity, like Captain Beefheart, right at the significant point of Truman or Cooper learning something. Okay? So there's electricity being highlighted.
Definitely. And then all the stuff about, you know, parallel worlding, right?
Yeah.
Riff writing or whatever. Like, that's definitely a huge part of the finale.
Yeah.
And just all the multiple Coopers and all that running around doing things. I mean, it's all very Bob.
Yeah, multiple what? Capers?
Coopers.
Coopers, right. Yeah, okay, so that's about all you have to say?
I mean, yeah, well, what do you have to say?
Okay, well, you know, I think of you when I make the following statement. You know the meaning of Olympia, Washington. And,
yeah.
You know, Albert told the female FBI agent that this whole Blue Rose thing came from Olympia, started in Olympia, Washington, where Worcester started. And
right.
Worcester, within the Olympia milieu, he stops in August 74, 7 years later, because of the battle from the gang from Olympia. That's Avaton, okay? Avaton and Paul Shockley attack Dave at the August affair of 74. And so Dave quits, and that's the month the Evergreens start. So I was the only person in the world in the position to know the two different groups and to notice the transition. And I've explained that to you. Well,
yeah.
We have an update at the very end of Twin Peaks where they go back to Laura's home. And you know the actual house that they filmed, that they used, you know where it is?
Where?
Everett, where Worcester lived.
Everett, Washington. Really?
Yes. I found this out in one of the reviews. The woman, when Cooper goes up to the house, knocks on the door with the older Laura, this woman,
yeah.
Long blonde hair, answers. That woman was the actual occupant and owner of that house. So she got a special little treat of being in Twin Peaks. Okay?
Huh. Yeah.
And nobody knew that, but her daughter tweeted up there to her friends that that was her home, and that she was in Everett, Washington. That's where the house is. That's where, you know, the house that Lynch picked. Now, Dave Worcester's been in Everett for, which is like Neverett, Bob Neverett, Everett for almost 20 years till he died in July. This series killed Worcester. So
this year he died in July.
Yeah, he just died.
Like, You didn't think to tell me that when I told you I just called his phone and it's no longer his phone number.
When the fuck was that?
Oh.
When did that happen? That was before the break.
Was
before
it?
Before I went off.
Yeah,
yeah,
I didn't think to call him right before he died.
I didn't know that he had died. Okay,
yeah, he died
when
like episode 8 aired or something.
I only want to call
yeah.
him like every 4 or 5 years, so.
You wanted to call him. Did you ever talk to him?
No, you always told me, don't do it. He'll think it's a trap. He's like, you would tell me, you can't do it without mentioning me, Sarah. I know you can't.
I've got the audio of your conversation with him when we were at Bob Carr's friend's house. Should I post that? Do you remember that? You're talking about Ion.
Oh, you recorded me when Worcester got mad.
Yeah.
Oh, you got that? Oh,
yeah,
we should play that.
I never
that.
Listened to it because it seemed personal, but maybe now I will.
I should post it. Yeah, let's do it. We may maybe play that because he's making his final complaint about us and Ion.
Huh.
How did you record that? Because that was a private phone call.
Yeah, I think you're using my phone, and I might not have his end, but I recorded it with like the recording equipment that I had at the time. But I think
you got muffled. You recorded both of us.
Yeah. I recorded like you and I think him. He might have been on speakerphone. I forget.
No, but if I was on speaker, yeah, maybe, because, you know, Bob Carr removed himself and went over to the other part of the room and talked to his friend. He didn't like listening to Worcester, so maybe it was on speakerphone so that you guys could hear it, because we were trying to have a group conversation with Dave. Oh, yeah, you find that. That'd be interesting. Okay, back to this point. So I, you know, watching all the different commentary in Twin Peaks is very good. Everybody has some interesting patterns that they find out, and it's a way of reviewing it and noticing or reinforcing what I've noticed. So that's what I learned on one of the shows, that the daughter tweeted that, hey, that's my home. That's my mother. And then we found out she was in Everett. I mean, this is really poetic. Well, when did he went to Everett about 95, 96, and he lasted, that's 20 years, eh? Yeah, 2017 is 20 years later. So Worcester's building up this Everett situation for 20 years, and that is the last scene. And so what happens is that Laura hears her mother saying her name the morning she had died. Now she's hearing it, but she's alive. And she screams, and she obliterates the house. The house goes black. It's media ecology. It's she wakes up. Well, there's different interpretations of what's going on, but she wipes out the house. It's gone. So that's pretty interesting. And then it shows Laura, an older image of her whispering to Coop in the Black Lodge. And then you linger on that image, and people say that Cooper looks a little puzzled, a little concerned. And then it ends. So what was whispered, that is what McLuhan called Finney's Wake, a whispering gallery. And then the Electric Global Theater became a whispering gallery. Everybody's trying to figure out who the Illuminati are whispering to and about. That's the big desire. It's an archetypal extension or image, archetypal image of what happens when you extend the central nervous system. It becomes a gossipocracy, not a democracy, a gossipocracy.
So, and everybody's wondering who's whispering. Another thing that I remember thinking at the time was that it the series ends with where it begins, right? So it plays on a loop, which is like Finnegan's Wake as well.
Right. Okay, look at this. So Saturday night, you go back and listen to it. If you haven't listened to it, I went to what was happening on my show on that day, February 22nd going into the 23rd, 1989. So we listen to it, and it's all fucking an important broadcast. It's all important. It's all relevant to the Twin Peaks scenario and who got murdered. Right there, right there. I just said, let's go back and hear it, and we listened to it for quite a while. It was quite incredible what I said and did that day, the day that we're talking that Lynch makes a big deal about, because he starts broadcasting a year later in April 1990. The Twin Peaks story, but I think you know about, he put a play on in 1989 up there somewhere. So you remember he did Twin Peaks as a little local theater thing in 89?
No, I'm not sure I did know that.
Yeah, you gotta look that up.
Okay.
He presented it in, I don't know if he did it in February 89, maybe. He could be referring to the play he put on and the murder symbolic of that. But he did, maybe Carolyn, you can Google that, February 89, or Gene Lynch, February 89, play, you know, theater presentation of Twin Peaks, locally someplace in the Northwest, that he did before, we saw it a year later. Okay, so you got Olympia and you got Everett. It can't get more poetic than that on the Worcester level. Now let's go into, Judy. So we find out that Cooper was trying to escape the Black Lodge, and they call the Black Lodge mauve or purple. Did you know that?
Yeah. And the mauve zone that's written about by that Crowley follower, right? I forget his name, but he was into Cthulhu. He wrote a book called The Mauve Zone.
The Mauve Zone.
Yeah.
Mob Zone. But, like, what world? Tell me which quadrant he's in. Give me a clue who you're trying to think of.
Oh, he'd be in, like, the Crowley world.
Do I know the guy?
I don't know if you know him or not. Kenneth Grant. That's his name, Kenneth Grant.
Ah, well, Kenneth Grant is important because of Corbin. No, and Lovejob. Lovejob.
Yeah.
Kenneth Grant had all. He had the word ion in his writing. Moving into the Age of Ion. He talked about that. Kenneth Grant. So he wrote about the mauve place?
Yeah. He wrote like one or two books called The Mauve Zone about like some sort of, you know, they're magic books about like this magical, like not fiction, but like magical instructional books about.
Right. Like mauve is French for purple. So it starts off that Cooper is having to deal with the purple zone, which is me. And then the next point is they find out, Carol, this in the last two episodes, that the ancient evil force, which could be a Rai effect, they call Zhao Dei, but
yeah.
Carol didn't watch Twin Peaks, so didn't know this. But they, for brief English versions, they would call it Judy. So
right.
Judy becomes a big question, Carol. And I didn't want to go into this unless you were here, because I don't know how much you want to talk about Judy. But you had a reunion with Judy during Twin Peaks this summer. Judy was Carol's nurse, and very interesting person in her own right of what she was finding. She introduced me to Starhawk, a whole bunch of different things. And then Judy stopped working for Carol in 88-89. Well, February 23rd, 89 might have been her last day. And then Judy went and worked for the Enemy, which was a drug company. You remember that, Carol? It was an actual drug company. Like, it was the only job she could get, and she had some kind of role in it. So then Judy shows up on November 24th, 2003, where I gave that talk at the McLuhan Center, sponsored by Michael Edmonds. And so I haven't seen Judy since 1989. So 14 years later, I'm there with a small, you know, like 25, 30 people in the coach house, McLuhan's coach house. And in the question period, this woman sitting right in front of me in the front row asked me a question. But she has a kind of a smirk on her face, and I look at her, and I start answering, and I go, "You're Judy. Judy's here. What are you doing here?" She had never shown any interest in McLuhan before, and then she told me, well, she read some McLuhan and heard about my talk and was there. So I had an interesting reunion with Judy. But I don't know how we could put Judy into this.
I'd say more like Rai.
What?
I'd stick with that. I'd stick with Judy as being Rai.
Well, no, that's what it is. But Judy is an important name in our life.
Right.
And
well,
Judy had an important involvement with Carolyn. And it's very interesting what happened to her.
When I went to the David Lynch Festival of Disruption last year, in September, a band called Rai played.
Ah. And they spelled it that way?
One E. No, it was, I didn't hear it pronounced, but it was spelled with one E, not two.
Oh, okay. Okay, so we're running out of time, so let me continue. So the Judy can be made very synchronous to us because, you know, in some ways Laura Palmer is Carolyn, okay? I'm Cooper, or Cooper's then Bob Marshall, and then Carolyn, the Laura Palmer. So Carolyn's always being harassed and followed and tracked. That's what always happens to Laura, and Cooper's always trying to save her. Now, did you hear me? I don't know if you heard this. The very pastel stripes that I saw when I became a hologram that he put on our screen is exactly the pastel stripes in the second last episode. Did you hear me talk about that before? And
no. Which pastel stripes?
Okay, when the bad Bob is sucked up to the White Lodge and he's in a cage, they're showing Laura's home. Then they switch to the sheriff's department. In that switch, so it looks like bad Coop is going to go to Laura's home, but the TV screen in the White Lodge switches to Twin Peaks Sheriff's Department, and that's where they're going to send the bad Cooper. In the transition from Laura's home to the Twin Peaks Sheriff's Department, you see the exact pastels Ion showed us on Skype on November 27th, 2014. He said, these are what the connections between two worlds look like. Now, it wasn't our world and another world. It was two other worlds, and we're looking at it from a third position. They're exactly the pastels that Lynch shows to show a transition from one world to another, which is pretty incredible.
That's great.
And that's at 13:10 in the second last episode, 13 minutes and 10 seconds. Also, Cooper at one point says, he's first talking to Gordon Cole, and he's giving him instruction. He says, okay, we got the number 253. 2 plus 5 is 7 plus 3 is 10, the number of completion. He does a literal number addition like I do. Like, it makes Carol laugh. You heard, you didn't hear, she doesn't watch Twin Peaks, but you recognize that tone, right? He goes, 2 plus 5 is 7, 3 is 10, the number of completion. He told us to go and call. And then when they go see Jeffrey, the David Bowie character, Jeff Phillips, I think it is, or something like that.
Philip Jeffries,
right. He takes the weird bad symbol, which is actually two sevens, and he merges the sevens into the eight. And that's what I've been saying for 25 years. Seven becomes eight. Did you notice that? That was the infinity sign.
Yeah.
The sevens, if you look at those two little angles, they're two sevens, they merge and become eight. And then someone says, it's slippery in here. That's what I call slippage. Then you have Mike say electricity. Then we go back to February 23rd, 89. I'm just going through my notes. Now, Laura recognizes Good Cooper from her dream. The big problem in a lot of the analysis is they don't know that a dream doesn't exist for humans. When people sleep, they go to other worlds. And nobody ever slept, Ion says. And therefore, the dream idea is all wrong. Just like James Joyce said that the dream, calling Finnegan's Wake a dream, is wrong. What's going on in Twin Peaks is everybody not sleeping and interacting and flipping into different worlds on and off. Okay?
Okay. That makes sense.
Then there's a lot of timelinings changed, the way Ion talks about it, very subtle, like the different crowds in the diner. Also, when Laura is taken by Coop back to Twin Peaks, it's a different Twin Peaks. Let's find out. Who's making that noise? Is that you?
Yeah, it's me.
Or something. Yeah. Okay. So they go by the diner, and it's changed slightly. But if you look at the RR, it looks like 22. The R's from the angle are literally 2-2. And then the 315 is a Dobbs number. There are lots of sixes. That's the hexadic. And the final question, what year is it? That's what everybody says when they watch Lynch movies. They can't figure out what time it is because he's having furniture from the 50s, cars from the 80s, and music or tape tracks from the 70s. You know that in his movie.
Yeah.
Can't tell. The props should. So there's Cooper. His last question. He's being the audience. What year is it? You get that? That's the audience. That's what Cooper. That's Lynch's main effect, is to not make the timing so precise, because he doesn't believe there is time, probably, which is a big Ionic theme. So then, now here's a really good one. On August 31st, Roxy was attacked by somebody, grabbed her bag, and she, in Berlin, and she did a huge scream she never heard herself do before. A huge shriek. And the guy dropped the bag and ran off. Her shriek solved her problem. And two or three days later, the fucking Twin Peaks ends with the shriek, which solves the problem. Totally,
yeah.
Reflecting
that's
something.
Wild, Bob.
Who said that?
I just said that's wild. You just keep going. You're listening.
Yeah. In other words, yeah. My reality, to the degree that Roxy is nine aughts involved in it, it happened to show the end of the fucking show 2 days, 3 days before. That's pretty good.
Timing.
And she came on Saturday night. August 31st was Thursday, my parents' wedding anniversary, and she came on and told us the story, and the next night the whole world saw it on the Twin Peaks. And the point is, she told us that her shriek was inhuman. She doesn't know where she got that shriek from. She'd never done that before, but she was miming what was happening in the show. So hang on for a minute. We'll talk a little more.
Well, Bob.